This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. It is Friday, Junior, by which we mean it's Thursday, the 8th of April. We have a wonderful show lined up for you this morning. But before that, how are you guys doing today?
But before that, breaking news, Mbappe hit a double to PSG to win against Bayern Munich in the Champions League. This is the first leg of the quarterfinals, and PSG win at home to Bayern Munich 3-2. I know this means nothing to the two of you, but it is an important win for PSG as they go into the second leg.
I was about to ask you whether you were speaking English there first.
Oh, right, cool. Chelsea beat Porto 2-0 away from home, which gives them a leg up, an even bigger leg up in the second leg. And if we go to yesterday's scores, City beat Borussia Dortmund at home 2-1. Real Madrid beat Liverpool 3-1 at home. So this will be very interesting as we go into the quarterfinal, the second leg of the quarterfinals, to see what happens. Yes, I know, overly excited.
I look forward to your next update.
I can't wait for someone to comment, say, but Roshan, why do you care? Arsenal's not in the Champions League. I'm used to it already. It's still football.
All right. Well, Noelle, how are you then this morning?
I'm okay. It's good to get some football updates, right? Expands your horizons.
It does. I don't think I would get them anywhere otherwise.
Sincere, no, you're
right. I'm sincere. I am very sincere. Just like how every day we expand our horizons.
Indeed. And we're going to be expanding our horizons this morning in about half an hour by looking at what's been happening across the globe. Noelle, why don't you tell us kind of what are some of the things that we may be looking at later?
At 6:30, EU and UK regulators are looking at, they are still recommending AstraZeneca despite some concerns across the world. Something about China and Taiwan, edit again, and the Olympics update.
And of course, in about 10-15 minutes, we're going to be talking about productivity. I love talking about these kind of things. We're going to be talking about work and whether you're working too much. And more importantly, an article that caught my attention is whether companies should be doing more to normalize career breaks as opposed to having that blank slate, a blank spot in your CV. Should we, and it being a taboo, should it be more normalized? That's something we'll be going to talk about in about 10-15 minutes.
And if you want to join in the conversation, you can. The number to WhatsApp us is 01878988899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we're looking at the fact that international travellers are set to return to Melbourne, so we're asking what might that look like? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Way by Fastball, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So this morning, an interesting story that has caught our eye is from The Conversation, and it's titled, As International Travellers Return to Melbourne, Will It Be Third Time Lucky for Victoria's Controversial Hotel Quarantine System? So this is, as we saw last year, the hotel quarantine system was unfortunately also the source of a second wave of infections in the state. So now that they're reopening once again, I think, to international travellers as of today, according to this article, the government there has incorporated a number of changes, such as nominating one single government agency to employ, train and supervise staff. They're also not hiring any private security guards. Staff are not permitted to have other jobs, basically tightening the system around these quarantine centres. But I guess this does raise the question of, in other countries, such as Malaysia, right, we are seeing vaccine rollouts keep rolling on to the point where international travellers returning may not be so far into our distant future. So what would that look like for us as well?
I mean, the caveat, of course, being that New Zealand and Australia have been at the forefront of managing this virus outbreak. Also, let's not forget, they're at the edge of the world. And, they could fall off the edge of the world at any moment's notice.
Yes,
right?
Because the world is flat.
Of course it is. I mean, yeah, the world is flat. Did you not know that, Lynn? Okay, we'll talk about this offline.
And they are very well ahead of time, aren't they?
Yeah. But, because they are so... This is the gift and the curse of isolation, right? Or being so far away from everyone else. They can are easily they've had to be resilient in terms of how they can manage how to manage their economy on their own. Yes, they've become more globalized and need foreign partners and things like that. But for a long time, they've had to resort to their own economies, domestic economies, to manage a lot of things. And they, because of that, they can manage their borders, etc., etc. So they have built, they have been at the forefront because of that. And domestically, of course, their policies have been better. They're more disciplined, things like that. Although the Melbourne breakout was down to human error and staff mingling with possible people in quarantine in an unseemly fashion, and then that breaking out from there. This is the third time's the charm here. But when it comes to Malaysia, Singapore, any other country for that matter, we are landlocked. No, not landlocked. We have borders with other countries that are, well, land, right? So Thailand and Malaysia has one border. Mm-hmm. If you look at countries like...
Well, Singapore doesn't have a land
Singapore
border.
Doesn't. Singapore, so Singapore has the opportunity of doing that. And hopefully they do that with us, and we can see our... We can start seeing family across the causeway again. I may have gone a little bit on a ramble there, but the point here being is not all countries are going to be able to do the Australian, New Zealand model the same way. So we, while we want to aim for that, we cannot be expecting the same result that they have produced.
So looking at how Australia doing it the third time, they are going to change like the hotel ventilation system. Hotel staff also will be decked up in standardized PPE gear, and they are going to increase the number of tests that they will run among hotel staff. So quite an impressive operations going. I'm also very impressed by the level of scrutiny that they have. And I suppose they already have data over a year, right, to know what works and what does not work. For example, like the kind of detail they go into, right? They say no two doors to be opened onto the hallway at the same time, because I think one family was found to have infected a bunch of people simply because two doors opened at the same time. So quite interesting how perhaps they even watch CCTV footages to kind of figure out how this infection even started.
Well, this is the third time they're trying to go with this. And, so, but it's good that they're learning from their mistakes.
Yeah, so I think these are all best practices that even Malaysia should learn from. And even in Singapore, for example, when I interviewed the Singapore Tourism Board, and the kind of details they look into, for example, there is a control over noise level. In restaurants, you're not allowed to, or you're asked not to speak so loudly because the virus is airborne. So every time in Malaysia, when I go into a restaurant and people are yelling across the room, I get very like, you know, jittery.
yes, understandably. Yeah, I think awareness of certain kind of infectivity factors, like whether or not the virus can spread effectively through air conditioning, through speaking too loudly in an enclosed space. I'm not sure whether Malaysia necessarily has the adequate awareness of those factors just yet. I mean, most of our emphasis has been on, okay, social distancing, mask wearing. And I think for the most part, people have been reasonably kind of have adhered to what has been put in place. But the thing about, about air-conditioned rooms, for example, I don't know whether either of you have encountered kind of those checklists that you have to mark off if you go into certain places. So I had to go to the vets, for example, and they asked me to fill a form to, you know, declare that you haven't done all these things. And one of the declarations that I had to make was that I was not allowed to be in an air-conditioned enclosed room with more than two people for a duration of an hour. And I kind of stopped and looked at that, and I was like, this is one that I haven't heard before. And I've seen it subsequently at doctors' offices as well. But that's not necessarily something that's widely publicized, I don't think.
Yeah, true. But when we're talking about, I guess, a look at international travel and mm-hmm. how things are opening up again, we remiss to not mention the fact that earlier this week, Singapore, passengers traveling to Singapore by air will be able to use the IATA, that's the International Air Transport Association's travel pass from May 1st. And this is, of course, as part of an ongoing collaboration between the Civil Aviation Authority of Singapore and IATA. I know some countries have said that they're not as keen on this mm-hmm. because there's a whole situation around whether it's fair or not. But I think for a lot of countries, this could be the way forward, right? And what this basically entails is passengers will be able to share their pre-departure COVID-19 PCR test results with the airline during check-in and on arrival at immigration checkpoints at Changi Airport. And this will help facilitate the process, basically. And actually, my sister had when she came back from Switzerland earlier this year, she did a similar process. She had a PCR test. She had some COVID test, which she shared with the airline. And then she had to show that when she came back here again. And then the quarantine period changes based on that when you come back home, come back to Malaysia.
So let us know what you think about this. You know, as we look forward to a time when international travel is once again a thing that we're able to do, what are the measures that you think would facilitate that in a post-COVID world? You can WhatsApp us at 01878988899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We are heading into some messages, and then we are taking a look at work and whether career breaks should be more normalised in this day and age. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was New Light by John Mayer. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark Roshankanisen and Noelle Lim. So now we're looking at an interesting article in Fast Company talking about, well, you know, the change that we have seen wrought to the working environment.
I wonder what you're talking about. I have absolutely no clue about
the
disruptions
that
we faced over the last 1 year.
It's like a dream. It's all back to normal now. No, it's not.
And the worst thing is now we have to get back to that pre-normal. Another new adjustment.
You know, right? I don't know whether we'll ever get back to that kind of pre-normal situation. And we'll get into this whole career thing in a second. But pardon the nerdiness that I'm about to go into, but Falcon and the Winter Soldier is a Marvel series that's ongoing, right? Mm-hmm. And right now it's in a period of time where if you've watched Avengers Endgame, you know the world, that half the world disappeared and then it came back 5 years later. Right now, in the story, they're dealing with the ramifications of the post-blip world. And it looks nothing like what it used to be. And you would think that, oh, things would restore themselves back to normal. But there will always be kind of more concrete ramifications. I'm actually curious to see what those kind of concrete ramifications are for the post-COVID era. Because I don't know. And mentally, we may want to go back to that. But whether people are actually ready to go out and mingle and go back to normal life, that will be very interesting to observe.
Yeah, I don't think I'm psychologically ready yet to take off a mask in public even, right? Because when I go to semi-crowded places now, I'm paranoid about people being even within arm's reach of me. If someone's standing too close to me on the escalator, I kind of creep up a few steps. It's just that's just the world that we live in now, right? So, but when it comes to balancing kind of work and life, because a lot of us have been working from home and, you know, the lines get a little bit blurred, this article is quite interesting because it talks about whether how basically to go about stopping working too much, and maybe how if you are a leader and you're a manager in some situation, how you should go about stopping your team from overworking as well, because it's not good for them in the long term.
Yeah, so this Fast Company article points to a survey that was done by Blue Jeans that found that remote workers, those that were working online during this pandemic, were adding roughly 3 to 4 more hours to their work days at home. So the question here is, you are increasing the risk of burnout, right? And some of the motivations for wanting to work longer hours may be to kind of feel like, trying to prove to their bosses that they are, you know, working and they are productive. And also, to be fair, I think sometimes when people are working from home, they're also juggling other duties, right? Making sure their children are fed and so forth. So it appears like they are actually ending up working longer hours because they are, you know, and closing the computer much later simply because of all the extra duties that they had to take on while at home.
Yeah, so that's one of those things that's happened over the last year. And just to quickly just get a clarification there. Now, Blue Jeans, that's not the Levi's that you're thinking about, but in fact, it's a video conferencing platform. Think Zoom, but just different company. And in fact, they were a startup that was bought over by telco giant Verizon over in the US. But this is the thing, right? I've noticed this in a lot of my friends as well, who their rooms have stopped becoming safe places and have become this monstrosity hybrid of work and rest, where you never fully get to rest because there's always a certain level of anxiety, work-related anxiety, that anything could pop up. And before that, when this is something I kind of relate to as well, because this is why I stopped doing work in particular parts of my room, because I didn't want that area associated with the anxiety that comes with working. But a lot of people don't have that space, and that can cause its own kind of mental baggage.
Absolutely, because when I was staying with family, there was no other option for me to go to work without any distractions other than the desk in my room, right? Because if I were to go outside, I was living with two children under the age of 10. So that meant that I would be forever kind of either bombarded with questions or, you know, asked something. And I could never focus on what it was that I was doing. So the only option I had was the bedroom. And that doesn't ultimately do, it's not very good for your sleep hygiene ultimately either, because you don't really want to have work be three steps away from where you're supposed to rest.
Yeah. So, and this thing about overworking, right? So, okay, so the question is about priority. Why am I doing this? Do I need to do this? What's the impact of me doing this? Or what's the impact of me if I just stop doing this? Is there any impact and should I stop it? I think the challenge is always identifying the borderline projects. I mean, the A-type projects, you know it has to be done because it has some significant impact. And then there are some, the C projects where, you can just do without them. But it's the B projects. So how do you upgrade them to A projects? And also identifying what gets in the way of productivity. Can technology tools help? But I think fundamentally it's this. Physical health is really important. If you don't get that right, you'll be feeling perpetually tired and you won't be productive.
So academically, we understand that, right? On a theoretical basis, this is something we understand. And we also understand on a theoretical basis that priority A, B, C, C, if it's not that not big of a priority, it's not going to deliver value, that maybe you shouldn't be prioritizing or maybe you should be killing it. But what happens when you're when your perception of value differs from that of people you answer to, then you're going to have struggles in terms of trying to get the proposition across that, hey, we should kill this so that I don't die of work. You know, that's essentially what it comes down to. But now, especially with remote working, it's even harder to communicate with bosses or employees in ways that would have been able to deliver that kind of nuance that came with that sort of situation. And I think that changing in communication, that's what's really not the only thing, but that's really put a hamper in all of this, because you can't sit down with your boss and have a heart-to-heart if your boss is that kind of person and be like, hey, listen, I'm on the verge of collapsing and we need to find something to axe here, especially because everyone's so worried about their own job security now.
That's why it's so hard to say no to your bosses online.
Absolutely. And I think that so despite how difficult it may be, you really do nevertheless need to start the conversation before it gets to the point of you having to tell your boss, hey, I'm about to break. You know, you want to have that conversation going continuously. You do need to be able to put up a hand and say, hey, you know, this is this workload is a little bit unmanageable right now, but maybe let's redistribute this. So ultimately, we're still going to get this done, right? The priority is that we still deliver on these KPIs in a slightly more sustainable manner than what we're currently practicing, right? And that's for an employee. As a manager also, maybe you need to, if you haven't already, keep checking in with your team to ensure that, you know, hey, how are you managing? Hey, what are your biggest obstacles right now? And ultimately, how would you like to me to check back on this is a question that this article suggests that we ask. So let us know what you think about this. WhatsApp us at 01878988899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. But right now we are heading into the 6:30 news bulletin, and to take you there is The Clash with Lost in the Supermarket. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Mercy by Duffy, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So around about this time every morning, we take a look at what's been happening in the international news. And I think mostly across a lot of the international news portals, the thing that has caught their eye is the AstraZeneca vaccine. So Italy has recommended that AstraZeneca's COVID-19 shot only be used on people over the age of 60, and Britain has said that people under 30 should get an alternative, and this is due to possible links between the vaccine and very rare cases of blood clots.
More than a dozen countries have at one time suspended use of this AstraZeneca vaccine, which has been given to tens of millions of people in Europe, but most have resumed now, so some including France, the Netherlands, Germany, and they have likewise set a minimum age. I think the challenge that EU has is because they have to contend with rising infections caused by more infectious variants, and that's threatening to overwhelm their hospital, their medical care system, and their pace of vaccinations lags behind Britain and the US. So you can imagine that they would be forced to make some quite difficult decisions on vaccinations.
Yeah, so just to reiterate again, the European drug regulators have confirmed confirmed a link between the AstraZeneca COVID-19 shot and rare blood clots, as UK authorities, as Lynn mentioned, recommend that people under 30 should take an alternative vaccine. But the European Medicines Agency, the EMA, said on Wednesday that a particular combination of unusual blood clots with low platelet counts should be listed as a side effect of the vaccine, but stopped short of recommending its use be limited, because the bottom line here was, in their view, the benefits of the shot outweigh the risks of the COVID-19 is a very serious disease. UK regulators also took a more cautious approach in that sense, saying that only that under 30s shouldn't be offered the vaccine, and officials described the move as a course correction that should not derail the country's rapid inoculation program, because I think Britain has had one of the fastest rollouts. So this is just something to just keep in mind as we move forward with the vaccinations, and let's see how this plays out as well. But again, the numbers are very, very small in that in terms of what the EMA has said as well.
Absolutely. I think these regulators are doing their job in attempting to suss out really the details of the effect that any of these vaccines are going to have on the population. But ultimately, you know, let's not blow this out of proportion. These are very rare instances of clotting that have been associated with the AstraZeneca vaccine. And at the end of the day, the risk of complications from contracting COVID-19 is much higher than the risks of side effects from any of the vaccines that are currently seeing use. So that, you know, you have to put that into context when we discuss, whenever we discuss these vaccine side effects.
So the Malaysian government is still proceeding, going ahead with the AstraZeneca vaccine. Now, with this new minimum age that some countries are imposing, I wonder if Malaysia will likewise consider that.
Moving on to some other news, we're taking a look at China and defense, because China sent more fighters. China sent more fighter jets. Third time's a charm, apparently. No, it's not.
All right, so China. I think the Chinese government's listening in on you.
No, I think the frog is winning the battle here, but let's go this way. China sent more fighter jets into Taiwan's air defense zone on Wednesday in a stepped-up show of force around the island Beijing claims as its own, and Taiwan's foreign minister said it would fight to the end if China attacks. Again, China showing its a show of force, or at least a show of its dominance in the area. It'll be interesting to see whether the U.S. responds to this in a certain way, militarily in the sea, whether they reposition some air force, aircraft carriers in the sea. This is this ongoing, continuing geopolitical game theory that's going on.
Absolutely. So Taiwan's defense ministry have said that 15 Chinese aircraft, including 12 fighters, entered its air defense identification zone with anti-submarine aircraft flying to the south through the channel between Taiwan and the Philippines. Now, neither Taiwan nor China has said precisely where these carrier groups were going or whether they were headed into the South China Sea, where there is a U.S. carrier group currently operating. So we will certainly watch the situation closely, seeing as we are also one of the claimants in the South China Sea disputes.
Yeah. So Taiwan Foreign Minister Joseph Wu said that the U.S. was concerned about the risk of conflict. From my limited understanding, the Americans are watching for a potential growing conflict. But I just want to very quickly mention that Taipei is now modernizing its military so that it can become a porcupine hard for China to attack. And these were some of the words they used.
So definitely a situation to keep an eye on. But right now we're about to head into some messages, and then up next, taking a look at what's on our local papers and portals. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Let Forever Be by the Chemical Brothers. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. We are looking at what's happening on our own local papers and portals this morning. I have the Star in front of me. Their headline here is Casting the Net Wider. So this is talking about the the potential corruption which involves providing forged temporary work permits for foreign workers. So the MACC expects to arrest more suspects in this case, including those within the Immigration Department. It's a story that's continued on page 4 of The Star. Noel, you have the NST. What has caught your eye there?
Several stories here. So a warning again, NSD says don't cross state borders for Ramadan, warns the police. The police will mount more roadblocks, especially at the red lanes near state borders to deter people from returning to their homes. For
the what lanes?
The red lanes. I think these are like what, the side roads near state borders.
Yeah,
so the police are going to be taking quite stern action, and people are going to feel the full force of the law if they don't have proper travel documents. It's just the sign of the days, right? Yeah, and the police have also gone to say the officers have been advised that they will take action. And so, you know, the police is adding that COVID-19 cases are supposed to be lower, but new clusters are emerging of late following interstate travel. So people will need to be more cautious, I guess. So, and also another piece of news about COVID, two locations in Sarawak are put under EMCO, and these areas are Sri Aman Prison and its staff quarters, and Kampung Serpan Laut in Asajaya. And it will be under EMCO until April 21st.
I'm looking at Malaysia Kini right now, and I'm not sure if you noticed yesterday there was a bit of news around an Anwar Zahid recording that came out, purportedly Anwar and Zahid, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi. So on Tuesday night, audio recording, supposedly a conversation between UMNO President Ahmad Zahid Hamidi and opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim, began circulating among politicians and journalists. And by the next morning, as we've noticed, it was all over social media. And it's basically, the audio recording was discussing how to steer UMNO against the PN government. Zahid has denied the recording and decried it as an attempt to destroy UMNO. Also, Anwar Ibrahim has denied that it was him. Anwar called the recording a ploy by the government to stab, quote unquote, certain UMNO leaders. But essentially, they're both contesting the authenticity of the recording and what it represents. This was followed, I guess, by overall, we're seeing more UMNO leaders calling for Zahid Hamidi to step down as UMNO president. And in fact, following up on that, one of those voices seems to be Padang Rengas MP, Dato' Sri Nazri Abdul Aziz. He's the latest party leader to openly call for the UMNO president to step down. So this is going to be interesting. We're seeing more backlash against Zahid holding his post. How that plays out in a purported, we're still all waiting for when these the UMNO general elections will be, on their own party elections will be. Khairi Jamaluddin has also alluded to the fact that he's ready to contest for the presidency. A lot of things to be watching with regards to UMNO and the fluidity of the political dynamic.
UMNO Supreme Council Member Dr. Muhammad Puat Zarkashi has also also said that the audio recording is a conspiracy at the highest level. And he's called it politically motivated. Definitely so. Whether or not it's genuine. So this was from a post on Facebook. So interesting stuff. I will also have the Malay Mail open in front of me, and then I noticed that their lead story from about 50 minutes ago is an analyst story saying Warisan can't fight alone after Pakatan snub, needs a partner to stay relevant. And of course, you guys did have a conversation with Dato' Sri Shafi Abdal of Warisan yesterday on the Morning Brief.
Yes, we did an interesting conversation with the former Chief Minister of Sabah and current President of Warisan, who seems to be making open invitations, I guess, to form a new, possibly new coalition, opposition coalition that doesn't have as much baggage as Pakatan Harapan and PKR and DAP have. So I wonder how this would work out, because right now Warisan is still very small, doesn't have much of a position here in the peninsula. But if they partnered with MUDA, they could create a bit of waves for themselves and see how they could how they can move forward from there.
Very quickly, just one piece of business news. So Nestle, they will be opening its pioneering plant-based meal solutions manufacturing facility, and this will be the group's first in ASEAN and one of only two in Asia. So signifying that new trend, right, to go more vegetarian and less meat consumption.
Whether or not it's a new trend here in Asia is a little bit questionable, but interesting to see more big companies kind of jumping on this bandwagon. Now, just a very fun piece of news from page 6 of The Star to round this out. Business owners think outside the office space. So this is looking at business owners who are exploring more kind of co-working options, including pet-friendly co-working, which I can't can't say I will be extremely disappointed about if that becomes more popular here in Malaysia. But right now we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and then after that we're bringing you more business news and analysis. But here to take you into the news is Rainbow with Since You've Been Gone, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.